Welcome back to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. This week we continue our series on the differences between men and women by talking about the physical differences between men and women. And most of this should be pretty straightforward stuff, but today a lot of people dispute or downplay these facts, and it's something that I think we need to talk about. So that's what we're going to do this week on this episode. Men and women have many commonalities, but we also have some very important and distinct differences. And that's something that we need to recognize if we're going to act virtuously with women and with other men. So without further ado, let's get on with the show.
Gentlemen, what is going on? You are here listening to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. My name is Steven Sloyer, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Brian Murphy. Brian, how you hanging in there, man?
I'm holding up. Things are going pretty crazy in New York, but I feel pretty good. I feel healthy, and I don't know anyone that has coronavirus, unless, I guess, maybe you. but I'm doing okay.
Well, thank God. And for those that may be listening in the year 2021 or in the future, beyond that, we are, of course, mentioning the coronavirus pandemic. But that is not what this episode is about, because this episode, of course, is going to be covering a lot of things about virtue. But in particular, we're going to be talking about the differences between men and women, picking up with our last episode last week about kind of just the general differences between men and women. We're actually going to talk about biological differences between men and women. And this goes, I think, well beyond just the skin, you know, deep and the surface level of when you look at a man and when you look at a woman. But Brian, why is it important, as we start off, why is it important to discuss these biological differences alongside everything else?
I think the biological differences kind of feed into everything else that we're going to talk about in the next couple episodes. I mean, we have planned to talk about different mindsets, maybe personality differences, gender roles, things like that. And I think a lot of those things, while not completely related to biology, certainly have a strong correlation to the biological realities that are what it means to be a man and a woman.
And I love how you called it biological realities, because obviously there are only two genders. This is what is just truth. And if you are a seeker of truth and a lover of truth and try to live humbly and in reality, that's something that you have to unequivocally acknowledge. And I think another thing before we really dive into this is a unfortunately loud refrain from a small minority of people nowadays will talk about how, you know, a lot of traditional male and female roles that have developed and been this way, not just over the past couple of decades or centuries, but throughout basically all of human history, have developed because the patriarchy or men have been enforcing things on women. And that's simply not true, because first of all, there would have to have been some worldwide conspiracy to have this occur in every single society, with the exception maybe of one or two small kind of aboriginal tribes. But on top of that, when you look at a lot of the traditionally masculine roles outside of, like, you know, husband, father, but you look at like warrior, chief, priest, and things like that, you can see how these biological realities directly feed into these roles, which is why we have what we have traditionally considered masculine identities and masculine roles, and we have traditionally feminine identities.
People will definitely today have objections to maybe some things we're saying, but at least this episode, there's not really much you can argue with. I mean, I'm sure you can find someone who will argue with even these facts, but I mean, most of the stuff we're going to talk about today with biological differences are just biological facts. It's just how men are and how women are, and there's not really much up for interpretation here.
Right, and we're going to provide all the sources, so it's not like we're finding it from some angry man writing in his parents' basement on a blog.wordpress.com. these are all things that, even if you just kind of look and use your intuition by taking a sample of the men and women that you see when you walk around, or maybe you're not walking around on this particular day with the coronavirus going on, but if you just kind of look at in your mind the men and women that you know, you'll see kind of intuitively that on average, these are correct. And as I mentioned in last week's episode, we do have to consider, you know, like the bell curve, because there will always be exceptions, but exceptions do not prove or disprove any rules. And that's something that if you, again, are a lover of truth, you just have to kind of come to terms with.
We have a list of some major differences here. And most of these I got from Wikipedia. So, and Wikipedia is certainly not the bastion of traditional of values. So, if you want to, you know, go look this up on Wikipedia, you certainly can find it. And they come from, I think, pretty reliable sources. But we can also include those links in the show notes as well. So, I guess why don't we start off with, you know, maybe the first biological difference that is the most apparent, I guess, and that's kind of the sexual biological differences. You want to elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, even at face value, when you look at the genome, most people know that women have XX chromosomes or an XX chromosome and men have an XY chromosome. But on the sexual level, I mean, I think the base thing would be the reproductive organs. I mean, men have penises, women have vaginas, and so on. And those are not just kind of aesthetic things. They're not just little decorations on our body. They have very distinct functions that are, well, very distinct. There's a very clear differentiating point between men and women that have that. And again, people could argue there are a very small number of people that are intersex, yada, yada, yada. Obviously, again, exceptions do not disprove the rule. 99.999% of men have penises, 99.999% of women have vaginas. And on top of that, you'll also see, you know, women have larger breasts that have their own function. Men do not really have breasts, and they certainly do not lactate, at least, again, for 99.99% of men. Same thing with hips. You know, women have wide birthing hips. Men's hips are a lot more narrow, and heck, you can even see the result in this in terms of like running speed and other sorts of things like that. And then I think another thing that's actually pretty interesting is that men do not have like the same hormonal cycle that women have, which, you know, impacts a woman's time of the month, so to speak. And this actually does have a lot of benefits for men when it comes to things like weight gain, weight loss, building muscle, dieting, and other things that we'll kind of dive into a little bit more in a few minutes.
I like the point that you made about that the, you know, exceptions do not disprove the rule. And I would almost say that exceptions prove that there is a rule. Like, if it, the fact that it's an exception means that there's a rule, there's a norm. And yeah, sure, you can come up with examples. Like, maybe there's a person who is born with both male and female genitalia, or, you know, they have an extra chromosome or something like that. But the fact that there are people like that, it just shows us that we're able to recognize that they are different because there is a norm. Not to say that they have any less dignity than anyone else. You know, they have certain issues and challenges that maybe most of us don't have. But then again, all people have issues and challenges and things that they, physical problems that, or things that they have to deal with. I feel like I'm trying to broach the subject without saying something that's not like offending someone, but it's so hard because you have to say it in a way that is, you know, you have to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, we're trying not to make this too R-rated. We're trying to keep it PG-13, but also making sure that we're not really trying to bring much drama into this, because again, we're just trying to present facts as I think 99.999% of the people again in the world know it. But these examples are actually really good. I'm going to take a quick detour into how induction and inductive reasoning come so natural to humans. I mean, we are born with a sense of intuition about sort of things, and you can apply it to the whole men-women thing. You know, for instance, let's just take something benign like apples. You don't need to have every single apple in the world, you know, like every single, however, billions and billions or trillions and trillions of apples in the world to realize that apples have a lot of things in common, from their colors to their shapes to their textures to how they taste and things like that. That being said, you also don't need to walk around downtown New York City and, you know, pants every single person you meet to see what type of genitalia they have to realize that men are going to have, you know, male genitalia and women are going to have female genitalia, with the exception of maybe that one person you find. But this is why the intuition is so powerful, because we don't need to do that. We don't need to do that to know that there is a rule, and it by using intuition and by having that kind of built into the way our brains process things, particularly in men, I would say, it makes our lives a lot easier, because we're not using as much brain power trying to figure out certain things, whether it's what is this thing that looks like an apple but may or may not be an apple taste like, versus, you know, like, does that person have male genitalia or female genitalia?
Let me ask you something, and this might be a challenging question, so sorry for putting you on the spot, but
okay,
what would you say to the person that says, well, you know, what about transgender people? Like, clearly they have transitioned to the opposite sex. You know, they have, you know, maybe they even had surgery or whatever, and they have the genitalia that they were not born with. What do you say to that situation?
That's a sad case, unfortunately, and I have kind of two basic responses. The first is to a claim I think some people make as well, which is saying that, you know, some people throughout history, and I've never been able to find a name of, you know, anyone that they can claim has been transgender, but they'll say some people throughout history have exhibited symptoms of being a quote-unquote transgender person. And first of all, I'll say that's not true. Second of all, I'll say that, you know, exceptions don't disprove the rule, as we've said a couple of times already. But third, you know, this kind of gets back to the whole patriarchy and men repressing women theory. It's like, well, that's not the case. People can come up with answers that try to fit the questions that they have, but that doesn't necessarily make them true. Now, when you look at kind of a more modern approach, it is very tragic, because, you know, this level of confusion, I think, without a doubt, is brought upon by people that have undergone some level of trauma in their lives. And I think the numbers are pretty good. I can't say that every single person, but I think a vast majority of people that are undergoing this have undergone some trauma, particularly with parental alienation and a lot of the parental problems that have kind of arisen with some of the more recent generations and how they've raised their children. And, you know, it's kind of that old adage that you'll hear a lot in conservative circles, but it's certainly true, where if I go to my doctor and I say, you know, I don't believe my arm is right, or I don't like my arm, I would like you to chop it off, they would look at me like they're crazy. But if you go to your doctor nowadays, and there are some good doctors that don't do this, but unfortunately lawsuits and stuff are kind of making them a little bit more obsolete, but you'll go to people and they'll be like, oh, you know, I feel like I don't have the right genitalia, and they'll, you know, chop it off for you, or they'll change it, and they'll put in a lot of artificial things to change the body you were born with. And, you know, if you have to view it in this way that, well, that is basically the exact same thing as going off and telling someone that you don't like, you don't think you have an arm, or that, you know, you think you should chop off your toes. That's not a healthy approach. And it's not healthy, mainly because you're not living in the truth, you're not living prudently, and you're putting your own desires above what actually is, which is a very damaging mentally, and as you can see, the result sometimes physically, thought process.
It's a very sad situation, and I hope anyone listening to this realizes that we're not saying that we hate these people. In fact, we are trying to care about these people and love these people, because, you know, anyone who looks at reality and denies it and tries to convince everyone else that what they think is true is the truth of reality, despite what everyone else can clearly see, you know, that person has a problem, and it's not, you know, it's not an easy problem to solve, but it's certainly something that we should help them with, and not by going along with what they, you know, their delusion of what they think things are, but actually helping them to see how things really are. But
you know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and we mentioned this in our episode on, you know, the coronavirus pandemic that we released last week, that whenever we're faced with a tragedy, whether it's worldwide, whether it's local, or whether it's just individual, the most important thing we can do to live healthy lives is to pursue it and to try to get through it and to endure it with virtue. And that means enduring it prudently, enduring it justly to ourselves and to others, enduring it with courage, and enduring it in a way that's temperate. You know, and there's tons of great examples. The temperate way would be not to drink yourself to death or to binge on Netflix. The courageous way would be realize that times are hard, but you have power over, you know, things that are external, certain things, and to work in a way that you can mold the things you do have control over. The just way would be to treat yourself with respect, to treat others with respect, and to give everyone their due, including yourself in this scenario. And the prudent thing, without a doubt, would not to make rash decisions that are, in a sense, irreversible or are against nature. And by doing this, you know, it's not that you're trying to come out a certain way, but you're doing this in a way that is still making you a much healthier and a much more whole human being.
I think we could have a whole episode on this topic, so I'd like to move along, but I think what we've said has raised some good points, and if anyone wants to go into that further, they can certainly send us a question, and maybe we'll, you know, have a separate episode or something like that. But going back to the point about women being on a cycle, I have an example that I can give related to dieting. So about a year ago or so, my ex-girlfriend and I, we were doing the keto diet. We're trying that out, see how it worked. It worked pretty great for me. I, other than needing to have ridiculous amounts of salt, which is kind of the reason I stopped doing the diet, I was doing pretty well on it. She, on the other hand, had a lot of issues. She was feeling very tired, especially during certain times of the month. And, you know, I was trying to help her deal with those issues, to work through them. And the more that we talked about it, the more that we worked on our diets, the more I realized that what worked for me in the diet was not going to work for her, at least, you know, in a certain percentage of the suggestions that I was giving. Some of the main tips helped, but there was other things that didn't help. For example, I think she needed to have like more protein at a certain time of the month or something like that. And another thing I was doing along with the diet was intermittent fasting, and she was trying to do that too. And it was just way too hard for her during certain times of the month. And I think just recognizing that highlights, you know, not just, I mean, certainly it's related to the sexual component, but that also affects her diet, the way she's feeling, her mental focus, you know, her energy levels, like all those things tie together. So it's not just about having children, although it's certainly part of the system that is producing these effects, but you know, it affects something as simple as diet. And, you know, we have to recognize those differences in order to appreciate what men and women need, as their own needs as men and women.
And here's a great example where like virtue comes in, and I'll give my own personal example as well, where one of the things that, and Jessica, I know my wife's listening to this most likely, you know, like I'll always kind of harp on her about like, oh, I don't think you're eating enough or yada, yada, yada. And I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm looking at her weight or she's drastically underweight or things like that. She's a very healthy human being all around. But if I look and compare what she eats to what I eat, which I've done before, and that's been very imprudent of me, I'll realize that she probably only needs about 1500 to 1800 calories at most, you know, including on days of activity in order to maintain a healthy weight, in order to maintain a healthy mindset, and just kind of be healthy all around. Me, on the other hand, particularly on the days that I work out, particularly on the days I work out very heavily, I need to maintain about 3,500 calories. I mentioned this in our debrief episode for January and December that I was trying to bulk up, and I actually had to stop that because it wasn't prudent of me, because I needed to, in order to gain weight, I needed about 4,000 calories a day. And that's a lot of calories. And I was not in the right place for that. But it would be imprudent of me to try to impose my own dietary restrictions on my wife, or vice versa, to take up her dietary needs, because the human, or the male and female bodies, are drastically different.
Right. And that would be the case even if you happen to be the same height and the same weight, just because the way that men and women are different. And I think we can kind of see that with sports, for example, especially something like weightlifting. Do you have any experience with like professional weightlifting, and why do you think that they separate men and women into separate categories? Like, why don't they just compete against each other?
Unfortunately, that question is being asked, and it's not even weightlifting. It's really any type of sport. But if we're talking about competitive sports, we have numbers like weightlifting or even running and cycling. The reason is because the men will just basically always destroy the women. And we have some statistics here that can kind of, show that these numbers are true 99% of the time, because the average American male, for instance, is about 5'9". That's me. I'm average. The average American female, about 5'3.5". That's my wife. She's about average. Average American man, 196 pounds. Average American woman, about 168 pounds. Now, my wife and I are both about 25 pounds below this, or 30 pounds below this, but I think when you look at the averages, they're probably brought up by kind of American obesity, unfortunately, but there's still a very large difference, in this case, 28, 30 pounds between the average American man and average American woman. And then here's where like the weightlifting bodybuilding question that you have comes up with muscle mass. So the average American man is about 75 to 89% of his body composition's muscle. And that translates to about 147 to 174 pounds. That's about me. I'm about 12% body fat. The average American woman, on the other hand, is only 106 to 127 pounds of muscle. And this translates to 63 to 75.5% of muscle, or of body composition. So the average American man doesn't just have more muscle on a scale of about 40 to 50 pounds more. They're also, their body composition is about 12 to 14% more muscle. And this definitely plays into the whole societal roles that I talked about. Because again, you could probably find maybe one woman out of 1,000 that's stronger than, you know, the average 100 men that you may know. But that doesn't mean that you need to have women be in the same role, every woman be in the same roles as men. Like, you know, Ronda Rousey is a great UFC fighter, but my wife is not Ronda Rousey. If Ronda Rousey can hop into a ring and potentially beat up a man, she could probably beat me up in the street. That does not mean my wife could beat me up in the street, or, you know, all of my coworkers that are female could beat me up in the street, because they are not Ronda Rousey. They are not that exception. So really getting back to your question about the weightlifting, I mean, if you don't separate these, just looking at the base statistics that inform so much of performance, it would just not be fair to women to compete against men in the same level of competition.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen the same thing with, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and weight and rock climbing. Like rock climbing, I think it's a little bit different with rock climbing, because, you know, you're climbing a route, and a lot of people would think that it's all about muscle, but it's actually more about balance and being more efficient. So there's certainly plenty of women rock climbers that are way better than me, and also lots of men that are way better than me. But you just watch the women, and they climb differently than the men, because they have to, because especially when you're climbing, you have to reach certain distances, and, you know, being shorter, it puts you at a, I wouldn't say disadvantage, although maybe for some routes it would, but, you know, women have to solve the problem of climbing up a route in a different way than men would, that are taller, that may be a little bit stronger. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, I mean, oh, well, yeah, I guess in most cases the men are better than the women. But, you know, the women can do a lot of things in rock climbing that most men cannot do, too, just because of their, you know, the focus of their skills on certain types of techniques that the men don't have to use as often. So that's one example. But when I think about Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like, that just shows to me how important size does matter when you're fighting someone, when you're using self-defense. Because I'm a blue belt, which is basically one level up with the from, you know, white belts, the first one. So I'm the next highest level. So I'm not like any expert by any means, but having a blue belt kind of means that I'm, you know, I can defend myself pretty competently. I might not be able to defeat someone easily, but I can do pretty good at defense. But when I go up against a woman who's a purple belt, like the next highest level above me, same body weight, it's almost like we're the same level. She has better technique, but just because I'm so much stronger than she is, it's hard for her to overcome me. And, you know, just think about someone who's, you know, maybe even a brown belt at is weighs 50 pounds less than me. It's like the same thing. So when it comes to defense, like, technique is certainly important, but size matters a whole lot.
And there's a lot that people don't realize about this when it comes to muscle mass, because obviously you could be a really buff man. You could have a high percentage of muscle and look it, you know, you could look like a bodybuilder. And obviously if you look at that person, you're like, okay, that person's definitely stronger than me. But if you take the average American male, which is really what we're talking about when we look at these statistics, and they may not be, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger strong, because let's be honest, how many of us really look like Arnold Schwarzenegger? But a lot of women and even a lot of men don't realize that differential between the strengths, where, you know, like if my wife tried to push me over, she probably couldn't, even with all her might. And if I just, you know, bumped into her, I could probably very easily knock her over. And, you know, we've on accident done that at times. Not that dramatically, but, you know, I've witnessed with my own eyes these displays of strength, and that's nothing against my wife being weak. She doesn't, you know, she's an average human female, as I just mentioned, with the, you know, all of these statistics that we just walked through. And Brian, you know, there's a couple other statistics that we have, like men's bodies produce more heat, which is due to higher muscle mass. And great example, this is the fact that they actually do have different men and women's sleeping bags. You mentioned before kind of the metabolism, the men's BMR, the base metabolic rate, is about 10% higher than women's, which explains the dieting need differences depending on, well, even not depending on what diet you're doing, just in general. But I think, you know, I think we're definitely going to have an episode coming up, maybe not the next one, but one after that, about kind of the roles between men and women and why we're really doing this podcast series in general. But just kind of, what's your takeaway with all of these biological differences? Why is it important? How does it impact us, and how could we view this in a virtuous and loving way?
Well, I think first off, we need to recognize that men and women have a lot of similarities. And we look at these numbers and you can say, well, men's BMR is only 10% higher. Like, that's not a huge difference. You know, muscle mass, man has about 12 to 14% more muscle mass. That doesn't seem like a high number. But, in the grand scheme of things, it isn't a massive difference. Like, as men and women, we're a lot more similar than I am to my dog or to, you know, any other thing that you could think of. But the key is, if we want to be prudent, if we want to be just, and certainly the other virtues as well, we need to recognize these differences. Because let's just go back to the example of diet. In order to be prudent about what I eat and what my girlfriend eats or what, you know, anyone eats, we need to be prudent and recognize that different people have different needs. Certainly different men have different needs from other men, and different women have different needs from other women. But men and women in general also have different needs from one another. And we can't make that. We have to recognize that in order to be prudent if we're making a meal, for example. Another thing that comes to mind is being just. Recognizing that, you know, when women need different sleeping bags and providing that option for them is taking into account what might be due to them, the ability to buy a sleeping bag that meets their needs. That's something that is just. So making the society that recognizes the differences between men and women will allow us to make more prudent and more just decisions.
We've said this a lot, and if you pay attention to kind of classical education or classical literature, or just read kind of, I'll say, tomes from antiquity, you'll see the three big things are truth, goodness, and beauty. And those are three things that definitely guide us in this podcast. I know they guide a lot of you listeners in the pursuit thereof. And any sane, rational, and healthy society that does good for all of its members, you know, not just the people at the top, not just people that are wealthy, not just people that are stronger, is going to pursue this. And this is why the pursuit of virtue is so important. We want to be prudent so we can live in the truth. We want to be just so that we can be good to ourselves and good to our neighbors. And by talking about these facts, as I mentioned last week, you know, it's not about saying men are better than women. Men are better than women at some things, like UFC fighting, 99.99% of the time. Women are better than men at some things. And we're going to talk next week about kind of the psychological differences where we'll really see some of the hidden aspects, but really the big areas where women excel over other men. So, you know, again, this isn't to say that people are better or people are worse. We always have to look at this with the eyes of looking at it with a bell curve. And I think most importantly, this episode, this series, and just realizing in general the differences between men and women is supposed to help us live in the truth. It's supposed to help us live more prudently so that we can serve our wives, our, you know, sisters, our mothers, our community better in the same way that we would also like to live healthier lives ourselves.
Absolutely. I'm not sure I can add much to that. I think the next few episodes are going to be good. I think that's kind of the thing that people will focus on and think about and maybe have the most objections to is the mindsets and the roles and the differences in personality. But I think I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be good for all of us.
Well, excellent. Yeah. I know you and I will be getting started on that pretty soon. But in the meantime, we just wanted to thank you again for listening to this podcast. It really means a lot to us considering we're getting near episode 40, I think. And we've been doing this for more than a year now. So the support and the outpouring of just feedback, the outpouring of love that we've received is really great because it really does help us. It motivates us. It helps us create better quality content. So please make sure to give us feedback. You can leave a rating and review. If you think this is helpful for you, please go ahead and share it because we want to make sure that we're sharing the pursuit of virtue, sharing noble living, and you know the pursuit of the good, the true, and the beautiful to all like-minded men. And I'm sure you gentlemen, if you're listening, you may know some like-minded men that could need this or would want to hear these sorts of things. So please do that. You can apply to join our Facebook group. There's been a lot of great discussion, particularly as people have been kind of stranded at home recently. So we've had a great increase in brotherhood there as much as we can remotely. And just in general, you know, we love your feedback. I'll say it again. We always want to have and hear your thoughts on these things. But thank you again for listening, gentlemen. And always remember, virtue makes the man. Have a good one.